Dedicated to the survival of American democracy in an increasingly dangerous world, this is Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney, acted as Assistant Secretary of Defense for International Security Policy under President Ronald Reagan, founder and president of the Center for Security Policy in Washington, D.C., the go-to man for defense and foreign policy issues, joined by the greatest minds in the security policy business, the special forces in the war of ideas at Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome to Secure Freedom Radio. This is Frank Gaffney, your host and guide for what I think of as an intelligence briefing on the war for the free world, a multi-generational war in which we find ourselves, as in the past, confronting a very dangerous totalitarian ideology that seeks explicitly our destruction. One of the men who understands this more than just about anybody is Robert Spencer. He is the director of a terrific resource, Jihad Watch. Find it at jihadwatch.org, a project of the David Horowitz Freedom Center. He is also the vice president of the American Freedom Defense Initiative, the author of numerous bestsellers, including among them the New York Times bestsellers, The Truth About Muhammad, and The Politically Incorrect Guide to Islam. I believe his most recent book is The Complete Infidel's Guide to ISIS. Robert Spencer, welcome back to Secure Freedom Radio. It is always great to have you with us.
Great to be here, Frank. Thank you.
Start with this business of the Islamic State. The president has actually opined that he is more concerned about global warming. Climate change, I guess, is the operative term these days, because it isn't altogether clear as the planet's actually warming, than he is about the Islamic State. What are your thoughts on that? And, where is this coming from?
This is all of a piece with the president's resolute denial of reality in regard to the jihad threat. Climate change, he says, is an existential threat, and ISIS is not. Now, this, of course, ignores two very important facts. One is that quite a lot of the what had been presented as the established scientific findings regarding climate change has been shown to have been doctored, manipulated, jimmied in various ways. And the very theory itself is, to put it mildly, unproven. Now, on the other side, you've got the Islamic State, or ISIL, as the president calls them, and ISIS, as everybody else calls them, and they, the Islamic State, as they call themselves, and they have issued very detailed manuals to their own people in the West about how to blend in with the larger population, how to avoid attracting federal FBI scrutiny or police scrutiny, and how to make the preparations, gather the materials, and carry out a strike against the American civilians. And so whether or not it's an existential threat in terms of being able to destroy the United States altogether, ISIS is certainly a major threat and a much more real one than climate change. And as for the existential aspect, it certainly has vowed to destroy the United States, not by conventional war, but by overwhelming the American system by so many attacks, so many plots, that the law enforcement and intelligence apparatus suffers the death of a thousand cuts and is completely collapses from this state of being overwhelmed. And I think that is a very real possibility that the president is brazenly discounting.
It really does seem as though, again, as you say, Robert Spencer, the president is lowballing this to the point where it's really malfeasance, not simply, willful blindness. Let me ask you about another facet of this, which, as you have done so much to cover and so well over the years, Robert, in your books and at Jihad Watch, the Muslim Brotherhood's operations. I believe the American people were subjected to a classic example of a Muslim Brotherhood influence operation in the form of a media broadcast by National Public Radio last week about a project that Brotherhood operatives are now engaged in, which is to promote within Muslim communities, specifically young people, the idea that they just need to model themselves after the Prophet Muhammad, and that will take care of any problem of radicalization. Would you truth squad that for me, please?
Well, in the first place, it's a very insidious project, because the more Muslims imitate Muhammad, the more actually they're likely to become terrorists, because you're talking about a warlord who ordered the assassination of his enemies, who ordered his followers to fight against and subjugate unbelievers, and so on. So the campaign itself is likely to breed more terrorists, not prevent terrorists from becoming terrorists.
But what was so striking about this, Robert, was that you had these skillful and accomplished influence operators, notably Dalia Mogahed, who has been advising the President of the United States himself about all this, portraying Mohammed's life in the most rose-colored way, you know, that he liked fuzzy cucumbers and, you know, he was a gentle man and he dyed his hair, and to make him just a person. Give us a flavor of what they are doing when they engage in this. Would this be what's known as taqiyya, perhaps?
Yes. Mohammed himself said war is deceit, and he allowed for lying in wartime. And actually, technically, they're not lying. This actually, a technical term for this in Islamic theology is kitman, which is presenting the truth but leaving out so many important details that the presentation becomes misleading and directs one away from the truth. All these things that they're saying Muhammad did, that he liked these cucumbers and so on and dyed his hair, these things are in the traditions, the Islamic traditions. But also in there is Muhammad ordering warfare, ordering his enemies to have their hands and feet amputated on opposite sides, sending down curses upon the Jews and Christians and so on. They're counting on
personally beheading hundreds of people at a time.
Yes,
as I recall.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So they're counting on unbelievers not knowing these things, and the NPR people just willingly go along.
It was just unbelievably, distorted reporting that none of this was even alluded to by Tom Gelton, the guy who so fatuously covered this initiative. Thank you for that calibration on it. Quickly, Robert, you have written about something that Donald Trump got a lot of heat for the other day and has, I guess, reiterated on several occasions since, namely that he believes Islam hates us. I've taken a slightly different view, which is I think whatever Islam qua global religion with 1.6 billion adherents believes or doesn't believe, at least among that subset, there are some who probably don't hate us, but certainly Sharia teaches them to hate us. And would you talk a little bit about that?
Well, this is a distinction that needs to be made. And Trump was actually very clever, I thought, in saying Islam hates us. He didn't say all Muslims hate us or even Muslims hate us. And there are millions of Muslims who no doubt do not hate us. But when one opens the texts and teachings of Islam, the Quran and the Hadith, one finds numerous statements of hatred against unbelievers. We're called the most vile of created beings in the Quran, likened to animals, and under the curse of Allah. And the Quran actually says Muhammad is the apostle of Allah. Those who follow him are merciful to one another, but ruthless to the unbelievers. And so this dichotomy, it does establish that Islamic teaching is that a Muslim should have hatred for unbelievers. It even depicts Abraham, the biblical patriarch, saying there'll be enmity and hatred between us and you, telling his own family members who are not Muslims, as Abraham is depicted as a Muslim in the Quran. He tells them there'll be enmity and hatred between us and you forever, unless you turn and become Muslim and worship Allah alone, and it tells Muslims to imitate that hatred. Not everyone does, but it's in the teachings. Islam does hate us.
The authorities of the faith certainly practice and encourage it, no question about it. Let me ask you, Robert, finally, quickly, the efforts that the Muslim Brotherhood particularly has made over the years to subvert us from within seem to be designed to attack all of our civil society institutions and governing agencies. Is it possible that they could have overlooked or decided not to go after the Republican Party and the conservative movement in their civilization jihad against us?
There's just no possibility of that whatsoever. They want to make sure to control the people who are in power. And to do that, they have to have people highly placed in both parties. And they have very skillfully operated in the Republican Party by means of people like Grover Norquist and Suhail Khan.
There's no question about it in my mind, and it is for that reason that there is a vote to recall Grover Norquist as a member of the board of the National Rifle Association underway at the moment. I very much hope that any listeners of ours who are lifetime members of the NRA or 5-year members of the NRA will cast that vote for the recall, because he has done, as you say, Robert Spencer, incalculable harm, I believe, to the party, the conservative movement, the country, and is certainly not fit to be a leader of the National Rifle Association. Robert Spencer, we have to leave it at that for the moment. Come back to us again, if you would, very soon. God bless you and your work at jihadwatch.org. Check it out, folks. Next up, human rights activist Faith McDonald joins us to talk about the tragedy of South Sudan and the genocide against Christians there and elsewhere. And more straight ahead.
Visit us at facebook.com/securefreedom with Frank Gaffney.